The Ashanti Kingdom through the internet at www.spiritfmonline.com to all parts of Africa, Europe, Asia, Antarctica, Middle East, and the Americas. Spirit FM, positive soul music.
The sound of a mighty rushing wind.
Welcome to Issues of Life on Spirit 88.3 FM. 60 minutes of news, prophecies, music, and the Word every Saturday from 8 to 9 p.m. Get revived, inspired, motivated, and warned about the times we are living in. Prophecies of old are unfolding right before our eyes every day. Verses in the Bible are today's headline news. Don't be ignorant, but be an informed believer. Join Brother Eben for the next 60 minutes and be blessed. Get this edition and others from spiritissues.info.
We'll be
good evening to all listeners. This is Spirit 88.3 FM. I'm Eben. Thank you for tuning in. I'll be with you from now till 9 p.m. It's always a privilege to come your way. And you know, last week I started talking about the Israel-Iran issues. And tonight I'm continuing. Unfortunately, last week there was a technical issue, so I couldn't get the full recording, but I've uploaded. I had 40 minutes, so those minutes have been uploaded. So very unfortunate, but tonight I'm continuing. I'll recap some of the things I talked about last week as well. But first, I'll be looking at the news, some things in the news. I'll play an interesting file as well for you to listen. And yeah, I think, yeah. So tonight is very loaded, very packed. I believe you'll be blessed as you listen to this evening's edition. Okay, so thanks for tuning in. Greetings to listeners wherever they are across the world. All right. This week, let me start with this before I get to the news item. This morning I had a message from a friend. He called last night, but I missed the call, so I got in touch with him and he sent me a message. And it's very unfortunate and very heartbreaking. I'm saying this first because the last I won't say a few weeks, for a number of weeks, almost 10 weeks or so, we're dealing with the education issues, the children, the schooling, the parenting issues and all. So this has to this borders on parenting and schooling. So yeah, he said someone, I mean, he's very close to and teaches in a school somewhere, and a primary school actually, so a government school. So during the lunch time, where the, you know, the children are being fed, the one of the teachers who happens to be, I think Osofumami, Asafumami or Osofumami, whichever, had the inclination that no, something was wrong. So she heard some noise, so she's going to check it up. So the other lady, yeah, the Osofumami left to go and check the noise and got to class one. Underline class one. Got to class one and saw two girls. Oh, this is serious. Two girls who were doing a mock marriage, lesbian marriage ceremony in the class. I mean, it's like there's no word that you can find to describe such a situation. Class one. And they've used paper they've patched papers to use that veil for their ceremony, and they've used paper and whatever to do a ring for themselves. Two girls. And I mean, this is so serious. So they had to get the head and all involved, and you know, but see, it tells you there's something happening. There's a spirit that is unleashed, has been unleashed into the world. I remember, okay, I can't remember exactly, but 5 years, 6 before COVID, at least for that one, I think before COVID, Someone sent me a message. Unfortunately, I mean, I've changed phones a number of times since then. So I think, but the message, the person in which the person, the Lord gave a vision and saw how a number of demons had been released onto the earth, principalities regarding the LGBT in particular, I mean, coming upon the earth. And you see, when you follow the whole trend of how this LGBT thing operates, clearly you know it's beyond human comprehension. It's just normal. It's not normal. It's an abnormal activity that underpins this whole behavior. And it is spreading through the media as well. I remember vividly reading one news item here during the time of Barack Obama, in the time where the wife made a statement congratulating Hollywood. This was when he was president. So the wife, first lady, was thanking Hollywood for their role in promulgating the LGBT across the world. You know, Hollywood has been pushing movies now. Actually, there are some producers who have percentage, or some movie production houses who have a percentage of movies that should have some sort of LGBT content. So that percentage should be met in their production. You know, so they've been pushing this. And because it's a spiritual thing, it's spreading. You know, people have gotten in touch with these things. I cited a case. I read the story of Rebel Wilson. She's an, I think, Australian actress, now producer, I think. And she's now a lesbian. But her own testimony was very interesting and sad, because she described herself as a straight person, a normal person, normal lady, who acted the movie. And listen very well, why the movie is very interesting and serious, that we shouldn't just take it lightly. She acted the movie and played the role of a lesbian in the movie. And soon after that movie, she felt, you know, that she had that feeling, and eventually became one. And even as now married to a lesbian, and they've adopted a child and all that. So the question then is, if the actress, who is not a lesbian but acts a lesbian role, can become a lesbian afterwards, tells you the spirit that is at play. Likewise, those who watch that movie and watch those roles can also acquire that spirit. If you believe the fact that demons can operate through what we see and all those things, there's a reason why they are pushing these things. You see, so children can be praised to these things by watching, perhaps watch the movie somewhere, and that's it. they've seen it and they would want to practice it. So this is the seriousness of when we warn about parents should be careful of what the content that their children are exposed to, TV and all that, and our internet and all these things. Some think it's an overreach. Oh, it's just, I mean, just allow them and all that. But the dangers out there are quite worrying and disturbing. And this is one typical case. So parents should be aware of these things and do whatever is possible to help the children. Okay, and then I saw the Minister of Education this week say that he's giving authority to the GES to sack teachers who engage in exam or practice teaching the children and all this. And I said, wow, that's good. At least we are headed somewhere. You know, we just can't allow immoral activity in the case of exam or practices to be standardized and normalized in a society. It's just an affront to educational system. You see, the danger with that issue is, if we don't curb it, eventually it affects the whole credibility of educational system, to the point where countries will not recognize certificates from this country again. So it doesn't matter. It matters, because when it's now a known fact that, as for this country, their exams are not credible and their exams are next to useless, they will not accept certificates from the country. And this can go a long way to affect almost anyone who I mean, pursues or wants to pursue further education outside the country. So the earlier steps are taken, the better. And it's not just sacking them. I think it should be made a criminal offense to the point where people are really treated as criminals. Because, you see, you are really damaging the morality and the mindsets of these children. If you, the teacher, you cannot do and teach them what is right, but you are rather helping them and really spoiling their whole approach to education, there's no way to describe such a teacher. So they should be treated as criminals. So it's a good step that is being taken, and I believe, yes, I mean, at least some sanity should be prevailing in the educational system, because the last 8 years, educational system has just been, I mean, if you say it, they say, whatever. But we are all witnesses to what we are seeing now. I mean, clearly something went amiss. So at least it's good something is being done about it to bring some sanity into the space. All right, so let's get into some news. And we have, this week, the world was really close to something quite big, you know, where we had U.S. sending their B-2 bombers to go and bomb Iran. That was a whole huge issue. That was Saturday evening after my program, later in the night. So it was Sunday dawn here when that issue, that news filtered in. So it was a big deal. Thankfully, it's calmed down a bit, but it's not calm. There's a peace treaty, they've agreed. But today, some statements coming out from Iran and a warning from U.S. also shows that all is not well, because the Iranian government, the Ayatollah, is claiming victory and warning the U.S. that they would attack U.S. Issues and U.S. Locations in the Middle East and all that. And Trump also giving a harsh warning that if they dare. So tension is not, it's still simmering a bit. But one news item I saw today that really got me a bit uncomfortable was, you know, the virtual embassy of the U.S. in, Iranian virtual embassy. They don't have a physical embassy there, so it's a virtual one. Gave a warning to Iranian Americans in Iran who would want to leave immediately. That means something is still, you know, up in the air. So this news says Trump warns Iran they will be struck again if they attempt to build nuclear program. And this was after they sent an operation in which had 125 aircraft, including 7 B-2 stealth bombers that dropped 14 GBU-57 massive ordnance penetrators or bunker buster bombs on heavily fortified Fordo sites. You know, there's also the speculation that, well, they might have removed some of their things before the bombing and all that, but whichever way it is, Israel and USA, if they dare restart the nuclear operations again, the bombs will come. Then the Supreme Court in US says that parents can opt their children out of school districts' LGBT curriculum. I mean, why should it take the Supreme Court to give such a ruling? Something that common sense alone should be able to solve. I mean, so it's a good news for parents in the US who know what is right and what is wrong. So the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled that parents can opt their children out of a Maryland school district's LGBT-themed curriculum materials over religious objections, reversing an appeals court ruling. In a 6-3 decision released Friday, the High Court ruled in the case Mahmoud, Tama, and others versus Taylor, Thomas W. and others at the Montgomery County Public Schools in Maryland cannot force children to be exposed to LGBT themed books in the curriculum. After a massive demonstration in 2023, a religiously diverse group of parents challenged the school district's refusal to grant opt-outs for lessons that include LGBT literature. The practice of educating one's children in one's religious beliefs, like all religious acts and practices, receives a generous measure of protection from our constitution, according to Justice Alito. And then another statement says that, and this is not merely a right to teach religion in the confines of one's own home. Rather, it extends to the choices that parents wish to make for their children outside the home. Perfect. I mean, if we are a practicing Christian family, so we are Christians at home, Christians when we go to church, but my son or my child cannot, practice the Christian faith when he or she goes to school, then it's an affront on the faith and an attack on the faith. And that's a very good ruling that they've given, because it's as if, yes, you can be your Christian whatever at home, but not at school. And that is not how religion is practiced. Religion is a way of life. It's a lifestyle. So if the person is a Christian and wants to, really stick to the religious beliefs, it cuts across the lifestyle, including school. And that's a good thing. And, as Supreme Courts are the highest court of the land, with this ruling, it becomes law. That means other districts in other states, parents can now also stand on their ground based on this ruling, which is very good. All right. So New York lawmakers passed a measure requiring social media warning labels. This is very interesting. Very, very interesting. Social media platforms with addictive design features may be required to display mental health warning labels on their websites for New York users, a move that advocates for family-friendly media have praised. Senate Bill S-4505 passed in the New York Senate last week and in the Assembly last Tuesday, and it awaits New York Governor Kathy Hochul's signature. The bill would require social media platforms that use addictive design features to display warning labels after users access the site. The bill, sponsored by New York State Senator Andrew Guedes and Assemblywoman Nelly Rozek, follows calls from then U.S. Surgeon General Vivek Murthy for warning labels on social media platforms. Yes, it's really necessary. New York joins Minnesota in recognizing that social media can be harmful to children and teens and requiring warning labels to be added to platforms, including adults, not only children and teens. Melissa Henson, the vice president of Parents Television and Media Council, said in a statement provided to the Christian Post, just like warning labels were added to cigarette packages, social media labels are intended to warn users against the harms. It's one common sense solution among many that rightly aims to confront social media harms, Henson added. PTC, which advocates for safe media environments for children and families, commented on Minnesota legislature earlier this month for passing the social media warning label bill. The legislation in Minnesota will require that social media platforms present clear warnings about the risks of social media use and provide direct links to crisis services. Under the Minnesota legislation, platforms will have until 1st July to comply with the requirements outlined in the bill. California is also considering a bill, AB 56, that would require social media platforms to display warning labels about potential mental health harms associated with social media use. In Texas, the proposed House Bill 499 would require certain social media platforms to include a warning label about the association between a minor's social media usage and potential mental health issues. More states are recognizing the harms of social media and taking steps to mitigate or eliminate them, Henson said. Utah, Georgia, New York, Florida, Virginia, Texas, Minnesota, and New York are among the states that have introduced or enacted laws that deal with social media harms on children. And this is a very good one, and I think all nations should even stand up and get this bill, in their various parliaments and laws, because clearly, it's been proven beyond doubt that there is an issue, a psychological and social issue with these platforms. And I mean, in previous editions, when I dealt with the digital parenting, I spoke extensively. I've shared extensive reports and research works and consequences. I've read news items of children, teenagers, and adults, people who committed suicide and suffered depression and all sorts of consequences because of the use of social media. So the issues are really real, and indeed there are cases for which some have to follow up, but there are some cases where some parents were suing, you know, some of the media companies, social media companies, for the deaths, the suicide deaths of their children and all. And so such warning, yes, is in order, because clearly the algorithms that these companies have adopted are addictive by nature, because it's been, you know, as an artificial intelligence system, a learning system where it's been able to learn the pattern of your usage, so your preferences, your interests. So it gives the suggestions and everything that follows are based on your history, your usage, and all your interests. So it's designed directly and indirectly to get you hooked to spend more time. The longer time you spend on these platforms, the more they make money through the advertising system. So it is in their interest that you spend as much time on these platforms as possible, because the longer you spend the time there scrolling, the more adverts you'll be seeing, the more money they'll be making from the adverts. Because the advert system is such that you have two types, pay-per-click and pay-per-view. If the advert system, the pay-per-click, you see an advert and you click before the person pays the Facebook or whichever company for that advert. If it's a pay-per-view advert, as soon as you scroll past it, you see that advert and you scroll past it, you've seen it. So Facebook deducts whichever amounts, if 1 cent or 5 cents or whichever, from the person's advert money. So the more you scroll, the more you see, and then the more money they are making from the adverts that you are seeing. You see, so the money they make, they are billionaires based on your time that you are spending on these platforms. So they want you to be there more so that they make more money. You know, so the more you see and the faster you see them, the more the adverts money will be flowing. So that's the whole algorithm behind social media systems. So it's designed to make you addicted. It's designed to be addictive, hence the addiction that comes with it. And I believe, well, it's good. It's good that some states are taking them on this. All right, so we have this next youth item that really fits in. This news came out this week, and it fits in with what I started talking about last week and what I'll be talking about later today or tonight as well. Declassified Hamas letter reveals astonishing religious fanatism behind October 7th. That's the October 7th attack in 2023 against Israel. So a previously classified letter written by Hamas leaders on the morning of October 7th, 2023 has revealed the terror organization's detailed plans and motivations for the devastating attack on Israel, including their belief that the assault would lead to Israel's complete destruction. This explosive intelligence document was directly reported in Hebrew language Mariv News following its discovery in a bunker used by Hamas military leadership after the elimination of Yahya Sinwar. The lengthy personal letter was written by three top Hamas officials, Mohammed Daif, Yahya Sinwar, and Marwan Issa, and addressed to Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah and Saeed Izadi, commander of the Palestinian corps within Iran's Revolutionary Guard Quds Force. Intelligence assessments indicate the letter was sent on the morning of October 7th, either as the Nukba fighters began their assault on Israeli communities or shortly thereafter. The document provides rare insight into the religious ideology driving Hamas, a Sunni Islamist organization founded in 1987 as an offshoot of the Muslim Brotherhood. Unlike secular Palestinian nationalist groups, Hamas views the conflict with Israel through an explicitly Islamic lens, seeing the destruction of the Jewish state as a religious obligation. Remember last week when I talked about the Iranian belief in the Magdi and all that. Yeah. All right. Organization's charter calls for the establishing of Islamic states in all of historic Palestine and rejects any permanent peace with Israel on theological grounds. Apologies for not coordinating. That's the subtopic in one of the letter. In the letter, the document opens with prayers and Quranic verses before delivering a stunning revelation. Hamas leadership apologizes profusely to Nasrallah for not informing him in advance of the attacking time. We are sorry we did not update you, the letter states, explaining that the intelligence capabilities of the enemy force them to maintain radio silence and avoid sharing attack timeline with external partners. Quote, when you read these words, thousands of jihad fighters from the Al-Qassam brigades will be attacking targets of the criminal Zionist occupation, unquote, the letter declares, detailing plans to breach the security fence, engage Israeli forces, and capture both military and civilian positions whilst taking hostages. The Hamas leaders justified their attack primarily through religious claims about Alaska Mosque, dedicating hundreds of words to allege Israeli crimes at the holy site. They cite Jewish prayers at the Temple Mount, the presence of religious Jews in priestly garments, and references to Red Haifa as evidence of Israeli intentions to destroy Alaska and build the Third Temple. Mm-hmm. They no longer hide their intentions to destroy Alaska and build the temple. There is no greater proof of this than bringing the red heifers, the letter states, referring to Jewish religious requirements for temple service. The document meticulously lists grievances, including restrictions on Muslim worshippers, Israeli security operations in the West Bank cities of Jenin, Nablus, and Hebron. The Israeli military actions in Syria and Iraq. The letter reveals sophisticated strategic thinking, analyzing an Israeli cabinet decision from August 22, 2023, which Hamas interpreted as a shift toward confronting each member of the resistance axis separately rather than simultaneously. This analysis may explain Israeli intelligence concern about miscalculation of the 9th of October 7th as Israel sought to avoid appearing threatening to prevent Hamas from launching a preemptive attack. Instead of causing us to enter battle against him united to defend Alaska Mosque, an issue that would cause the entire region to explode in his face, he would retreat tactically to enter separate battles with each one directly, the Hamas leaders wrote. That's referring to Netanyahu, the prime minister of Iran. Yeah. Then the letter's most chilling sections reveal Hamas' messianic beliefs about destroying Israel and transforming the Middle East, predicting the attack would eliminate the Oslo Accords and topple Arab regimes, normalizing relations with Israel. They write, this battle, by God's grace, will change the equations and rules that have become conventions. We will wash away and erase the stage of struggles and conflicts that struck the region and realize, with God's permission, the greatest historic turning point in Islamic history. The Hamas leaders urgently plead with Nasrallah to join the assault. Today, Alaska is women and men. Women and then Mura Putin activists are crying out to you, and Jenin, Hebron, and the blood of martyrs are calling you to mobilize. The letter outlines specific military tactics Hamas hoped Hezbollah would deploy, concentrated rocket bombardments to overwhelm Iron Dome systems, targeting airfields and military headquarters to paralyze Israeli air power, followed by large ground attacks to seize territory and then population centers, concentrated bombing with rockets on occupations, basic arteries in large barrages will disperse and destroy the Iron Dome. The letter details predicting this would create a state of shock and fear, leading to a rapid collapse. The authors suggest a coordinated assault lasting 2 to 3 days would achieve their goals of completely destroying Israel. Remarkably, the letter also reveals Hamas's propaganda strategy, instructing that public discourse should not speak of eliminating or destroying Israel, but rather focus on international resolutions and political rhetoric to prevent other nations from fighting alongside Israel. 20 months after October 7th, the Middle East landscape has indeed been transformed, though not as Hamas envisioned. Whilst October 7th massacre inflicted unprecedented casualties and trauma on Israel, subsequent Israeli response has decimated the Hamas leadership and capabilities. Mohammed Daif, Yahya Sinwar, Marwan Issa, Hassan Nasrallah, and Said Izidi, all recipients or authors of this letter, have been eliminated, along with hundreds of senior operatives across the resistance axis. The letter stands as a chilling testament to the religious fanatism and the state strategic miscalculation that led Hamas to launch its devastating attack, ultimately achieving the opposite of the apocalyptic vision whilst causing immense suffering on all sides. So, yeah, this letter is just one to add up to what I started talking about last week, you know, from the Iranian perspective, why they hate Israel and the role they are to play in, you know, the end time. They believe, you know, the end time, it's not only Christians that we have eschatology in terms of like talking about the end time, but Islam also has an end time eschatology, for those who don't know. So they are, ironically, there are a lot of, you know, there are some parallels with the Islamic eschatological view compared to the Christian view, and they are also direct opposites. So it's quite interesting. I'll be talking about some of them as we go on the editions. So last week I talked about Iran being the chief sponsor of global terror. So they fund Hamas, and this letter is a clear confirmation as well. You know, Hamas, Hezbollah, the Houthi rebels, and these are all proxies that they fund, you know. Though the Iranian government, the Islamic government is a Shiite. They are the Shiite aspect of religion, the Islamic religion. The Hamas were Sunni, but they have a common issue, common belief that, yes, they all have a role to play in the end time. They all have a role to play in terms of the destruction of Israel, because they believe the end time cannot happen except Israel is eliminated, you know, for the Mahdi to come. And, you know, last week I spoke a bit about the Mahdi. And so when they chant death to Israel, death to America, you know, it's not just a rhetoric, it's a doctrine. I mean, they believe it fully. And so the Iran's regime, they have a religious agenda. And so they are ruled by these radical Islamic leaders driven by the jihadist eschatology. And their motivation is not political. It's pure demonic and evil. I mean, the agenda against Israel is not a political one, no. I mean, so you see, when you just follow the media, yes, the media is addressing things from the geopolitical point of view. So it's like, oh, okay, yes, it's just a country-to-country type of thing and all that. Israel is the aggressor, is the oppressor against, I don't know. But when you understand the spiritual dimensions of it, let me play this video before I forget. And I think it will help you to get some better understanding as well.
Place, but I want to start by just reading you a message that I got early this morning. But this was written to me early this morning. Why at our house church here in southern Iran, brothers ask me to write you to beg the church in the West to pray for Iran. For all of us who are hostages of this Islamic Republic, Ayatollahs and their regime. While 100 U.S. dollars equals 7 million toman, that's their money. And the morality police is back to beating us to death for not keeping Islamic rules and laws. We work a month for only $100. Everybody are hungry and mentally unstable at this point. Because of sanctions, there is no medicine for us. For years, we are shouting for help, but no one comes. Islamic Republic is not Iran. Please tell the church in the West, Islamic Republic is not Iran. Last night, everybody here, pray Israel, be safe. We prayed for hours, and we hear none die. And we were happy of this. But dear brother, we were happy about the attack, because this might be the beginning of our nation being invaded by Israel and the U.S. in order to save us. We pray, U.S. and our Jewish brothers, the Israelites that we love, come set us free. Sorry. And let the history know that we Iranians are the only people who want to be invaded by the West to free us from this Islamic devil. Beg the church to pray for innocent people of Iran, because we are under attack by these demons for more than 47 years now. The rate of suicide is the highest it has ever been. If we will be wise enough not to kill ourselves, we may end up just dying in prison for not obeying this Islamic Republic, or for knowing our great Jewish King Jesus. He is our God. Please ask them to pray.
Wow. Please ask the church to pray. You know, this is, you know, the Iranian Christians, you know, there's a strong underground church in Iran. A lot of people are being saved through satellite television and all that, and it's quite a brutal regime that is ruling. It's such, you know, Christians are just arrested, brutalized, people are just killed and all that. This year alone, I think I was watching one report, they've hanged publicly over 1,500 people have been hanged already this year. You know, it's like just instilling fear in the populace. And the majority don't like the government, they don't like the like Islamic regime, but because of the brutal way of doing things. So this is a letter sent from one of the underground churches to this pastor in the US, and I mean, how emotional it is while he's reading it, shedding tears and all. You know, so this is the reality on the ground. The people in Iran wish these bombings will even not end, so that the government can be toppled. This is how they see it there. And they, I mean, I watched one leader, one Jew, Jewish, Iranian woman, Christian woman, who is outside Iran, but like was being interviewed, and the excitement and prayer was like, I mean, the government should fall, the Islamic government should fall as the attacks were going on. I mean, they'll have some disappointment as this whole thing didn't go that way, like the government hasn't fallen and all. But that's their prayer that the government should fall. You see, so it's the whole spiritual dynamics when it comes to Iran. It's not the same as what the, you know, of course, the CNN is not a religious or a Christian station, so they will not tell you things from this angle. They will just play the geopolitics and all that, you know, all the other stations, BBC, they are just the geopolitics aspect that they will talk about. So as a Christian, if you don't understand the dynamics from the spiritual point of view, you can just be caught in the frenzy of, oh, Israelis are there, Jews are there, Jews are being, why are they doing attacking Iran? Iran is just there quietly, they've not done anything. Why is Israel attacking them? I mean, I put it this way, that it's out of ignorance of the realities. That's why a Christian will be saying such a thing, because if you understand the dynamics, there's no way you would blame the Israelites for the things they are doing. Because you see, when they chant death to Israel, death to America, they mean it. It's not a joke. It's not just some joke they are saying it or just for fun. No, they mean it. So when you know this is your enemy, and they don't hide it. I mean, they've said it. Ayatollah has been saying it over the years, all these 4 decades plus. He's been, the hatred for Israel has been worsening and increasing by the years. The various presidents, Ahmadinejad, the one who died in a plane crash last year, helicopter as a crash last year, the current one, and all, they've all been, you know, they have the regular governments that are like the president, parliament type of thing, and then the supreme leader is the Ayatollah. So that's the spiritual leader. So all of them, they've been saying death to Israel, death to America, and they've been saying that Israel has to be exterminated. They don't hide it. They say it. Israel has to be removed. It's like a cancer that should be removed from the Middle East. They don't belong there and all that. So when you know they are preparing something for you, I mean, working on a nuclear program, and you see, when they tell you, Iran says they are using the nuclear for, they are going to use for energy purposes, I mean, you know it's a lie, because Iran is one of the well-endowed oil-rich countries in the world. If you have oil, thermal is the cheapest option for you. Thermal in terms of, like, the way we have the Ghana, Sogli, and the TTP, and all these various plants providing us power aside the hydro, that's the cheapest. It's expensive for us, yes, but for them, it's the cheapest because they have it in abundance. So why would you leave the cheap option for you and be struggling with sanctions over the years, sanctions that has crippled your economy? You heard the letter the man was reading. Because of this nuclear stuff and all, so serious sanctions on Iran. They can't import things from a lot of things from the Western world. So they are virtually like slaves in their country. And if it's just for energy purposes, would you subject your citizens, your country, just because of energy, when you already have a cheap energy source? You see, so it tells you that their desire for nuclear is not, it's nothing to do with energy. It's purely for nuclear bomb production. And their statement also, confirms it indirectly and directly when they contradict themselves, to the point of, yes, they need to. Why, if Israel has nuclear, why can't they? You see, so when they say this, what does it mean? That means they're also trying to have, just as Israel has. You see, so this is the world that we are in. So this whole Israel-Iran thing, don't look at it from the geopolitical aspect, because that one, when you look at it from that, you will not see the real picture. And it just looks, just an unfair type of attack on one nation by another and all that. But let's get the spiritual dynamics, and that gives you a better understanding. All right. So Iran doesn't seek peace, no. It seeks apocalyptic war. Their goal is to trigger Armageddon through nuclear destruction. And, so a nuclear-armed Iran would fulfill their eschatological goal. So last week, I spoke about the Mahdi. The Mahdi is the 12th Imam. It's one of the beliefs in the Shiite eschatological doctrines, that the Mahdi will come with Christ or with Jesus together in the last days. So that, like, for their belief, so Jesus is just a prophet and he will come with the Mahdi. And ironically, the description, if you do further studies, the description of the Mahdi also matches what we Christians call the Antichrist. That's one of the opposites, So what they say is the one bringing redemption to the world is also the one that Christians also see him per the characteristics given in the Bible fits as the Antichrist. So they believe in the end time. And they also know we are in the end time. They know. You see, so that's the desire and the aggression to speed up their activities, So if you read, if you listen well to the Hamas excerpts of the letter that I read, they also believe in this eradication of Israel from the Middle East to also help with the establishment, clearing the place for the end time. So that is the driving force, the hatred, the driving force is purely based on eschatological beliefs of the end time. So it's not something that is going to stop. Yes, this whole, this peace thing that is a little cool off, but the war is not ending. It's going to flare up again because so far as Iran is concerned, they have to exterminate Israel from the Middle East area because they have to prepare the way. It's like John the Baptist preparing the way for Christ to come. At a point, Ahmadinejad, who was the president of Iran up to 2012, from 2012, thereabout, 2016, he was the president around that time. Last week, I read his speech at the United Nations. And even at the UN, he was talking about referring to the Mahdi and all that. You see, so, and there was a point he referred to himself as the one who was to prepare the way. He saw himself like a John the Baptist, preparing the way for Christ to come, preparing the way for the Mahdi. So he was so energetic in doing what he was doing, trying to push and all. So they see it as a privilege. They are in a privileged position. So if you are a president, you see yourself as being in a privileged position to extend your powers to achieve this ultimate goal of preparing the way for the Mahdi, the 12 Imam, to come. See, so this is the underlying driving force that, underpins this whole Iranian hatred for Israel. So that alone should tell you that there is no way the Islamic religion, the governments in Iran would love Israel. It's not possible. They are not. No. They are sworn enemies. They see them as their sworn enemies, who must be removed at all cost to achieve the ultimate spiritual, the greater spiritual need of preparing the way for the Mahdi to come. So peace talks will just assuage them. It's just something that will be just for a while. But you can't, it's like stopping somebody, a believer who believes seriously in Christ and is working for Christ, and say you should stop, you shouldn't. You see, so they won't stop. No, they won't stop, because today Yemen, one of the Yemen leaders said that Iran is bringing things there, so it tells you if things are slowing down here, okay, we'll divert attention to Yemen and try and Yemen is also a proxy, so they will be. But Yemen, yes, Israel has been bombing there for the last few weeks extensively, so if they accept the things from Iran at their own pleasure, they will have it. Israel will also come and continue the bombings there, because it's an axis. They've all ganged up, and the agenda is, let's remove Israel from our midst. And I quoted last week this verse in Psalm 83, for come, let us wipe them out as a nation. And that's what they are saying. They are saying it literally. Come, let us remove that, the agenda. Hamas, Hezbollah, Islamic Jihad, Houthi rebels, Iran itself, and all. Come, let us remove this Israel as a nation. And if you read Psalm 83, the various states that are listed there, Psalm 83 is a prophetic verse which has not been fulfilled yet. It's one of those prophetic verses, Psalm 83, Ezekiel 38, 39. All these are yet to be fulfilled. So when some of these things happen, they are precursors to bigger things ahead. So when you read, the Bible, you see Persia. Persia is the modern day Iran as we know it. So when Esther, if you read the story of Esther, that the Jews were to be killed, the plots to kill is, I mean, them and all that. It's that same hatred, that type of hatred that continues today. That hatred for the Jews, that hatred, you know. So there are several verses. Iran is also, if you read in Daniel, is there, it appears in Esther, it appears in Isaiah, it appears in Nehemiah, you know. So if you read Daniel 10:13, the prince of Persia, so that same Persia, Iran. So it's Iran is, has been in the Bible days till now. So yes, for last week I was putting the statement, I put out the statement that, you see, there are people who question even the ownership of Israel, of the land in the first place, that why is their land, that land theirs? It's not theirs, the occupiers and all that. I mean, so you have people who believe Iran is Iran, or Persia, now Iran, yes, it's the same land. You believe Egypt, you believe Jordan, you believe Syria, you believe Turkey, you believe Ethiopia, Sudan, I mean, all these places, you believe there. I mean, what's there in the Bible, you believe it. But when Greece, Syria, and all, but when it comes to Israel, you say, oh, no, that's for Israel, they are occupiers. The land is not theirs, it's for the Palestinians. And the land that was given to them by God himself through Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and all, you see, except we don't believe the word of God. That's the point. If we don't believe the word of God, we don't believe the promises of God, then we can argue from that angle. But if you're a believer who believes that the word of God is true, and you believe Abraham, you believe in Isaac, you believe in Jacob, that all these, and these people indeed existed, and that God's promises to them indeed was true, why should there be a doubt as to the existence of Israel as a nation? Why should there be? See, so, I mean, last week, this week, and all, when I see some of the people, they hate Israel to the core, you know, and some are also basing it based on the argument that, yes, after Christ came, the church is the new Israel, so Israel doesn't exist again. You know, that argument doesn't hold, because after Christ came, in the book of Acts, they were in Israel. The church being the new Israel doesn't make Israel as a state null and void. No. And at the end of the day, the promises, I mean, God willing, next week I'll be reading more about it. We'll be going to the promises that God said about the nation Israel, which are being fulfilled even now. You see, so it's either we believe the Bible or we don't believe the Bible. So let's change our mindsets. Perhaps if you are among those who have been deceived by the rhetorics from the social media and the, you know, the liberal anti-Bible, anti-Israel media like the CNNs and all that, get a better perspective from the biblical point of view when it comes to the Israel-Iranian conflict, because it's not just a normal conflict like Russia and Ukraine type of thing. Of all the conflicts in the world, the one that has a direct spiritual connotation is the wars against Israel. Oh yes, the wars against Israel are directly related to Bible prophecies in various ways. Because why the devil would want to take Israel as a land, last week I mentioned that, you see, Israel, is Jerusalem is not just a city like Accra or New York or any other, but it's a serious different, it's a different city altogether. Matthew 5:35, when Jesus was there, I was on giving the Beatitudes, it says, let me read from verse 34. But I say unto you, swear not at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, 35, nor by the earth, for it is his footstool, neither by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Neither by Jerusalem. This is not referring to any spiritual Jerusalem. This is referring to physical Jerusalem as a state, as a city. Today that it exists in Jerusalem. Jesus says that, don't even swear by it, because it's the city of the great king. And I said last week, and I'm repeating it, eventually Christ will come back to rule from Jerusalem. The millennial rule of Christ, he will be ruling from Jerusalem. So Jerusalem is a city that the devil has really targeted, because it has direct spiritual implications. So the devil is not interested in any other city like he has when it comes to Jerusalem, because it's such an important city that there are countless verses that even talk about Jerusalem and all that. For instance, Zechariah 12, behold, I will make Jerusalem a cup of trembling unto all the people around about, where they shall be in siege both against Judah and against Jerusalem. Jerusalem is, because of that spiritual aspect, because it's the city of the great king. So it's not like any other king, any other city. So when they say, let's divide Jerusalem and all that, this is all part of the agenda. But you see, it's quite interesting how the devil tries to do things. But eventually, if you read your Bible, you read the book of Revelation, we know the end. You know, it's one of the interesting stories, because it's like you are a movie that you've watched before. If you are watching it again, you know how it went. So thankfully, the book of Revelation gives us the end of the story, and we know how the devil ends. We know how it will end. So yes, at the end of the day, Jerusalem cannot be destroyed by the attacking enemies. No, they will try, but they cannot destroy it. Yes, I mean, Jerusalem will have attacks, part will be destroyed and all that, but eliminate Jerusalem, eliminate Israel from the Middle East, no, that one would not happen. All right, so soon. Time is gone. Okay, thank you for listening. Greetings, Beatrice. Yeah, thanks for listening. Okay. All right, so various messages. Thanks for... All right, okay. So God bless you for listening. And I believe you are getting some insight. God will, next week I'll be continuing. And so that we have a better understanding of Israel, the role of Israel, the end times and all that is happening. And let's pray for the peace of Jerusalem. And, you know, it's one of the verses that is in the Bible that, you know, praying for the peace of Jerusalem, it's something which there are many believers who have never prayed for the peace of Jerusalem, because they are even angry about Israel, let alone pray for the peace of Jerusalem. You know, so Psalm 122 verse 6, pray for the peace of Jerusalem, they shall prosper that love thee. You know, it's either you believe the Bible or you don't believe the Bible. I mean, but so far as this is in the Bible, pray for the peace of Jerusalem, they shall prosper that love thee. It's there. It's in the Bible. So the countries that choose to love Jerusalem, love Israel, if God blesses them, yes. And the countries that choose to hate Israel, to, well, you know, so that is it. It's all about a matter of choice, whether to stick to what the Bible says or we stick to what the social systems and the geopolitics and the liberal networks will tell us. All right, so thanks for listening. Today I have the full recording. It will be uploaded to spiritissues.info and to the Telegram group. So good night and God bless you.
the water.